Okay.
I'm hoping we'll get through the other arthropods today. Reviewing that, it didn't look like it ought to take us too long. Mm-hmm. So, first thing, I did check on whether Daddy Longlegs, the Apiliones, have a patella or not, and they do, so that was of interest to you. So, any other questions before we start today?
Nothing that I can think of that, you know.
Yep. You say they'll come, probably come faster and more furious as we start talking about the first exam, which I think we finish the other arthropods and then we do the Atergoda and then we have an exam. So, still probably going to be over a week away. It's scheduled for the 24th, and it is through the Thysanura. So that'd be the Atergoda. But if we're lucky, I mean, we'll finish the other arthropods today, and then if we're lucky, we'll go out collecting at least Tuesday, maybe Tuesday and Thursday. And so we won't even start on the Atergoda till next Friday. And I usually, even if we got through the whole Atergoda in one day, which I doubt we will, that would be the end point for the first exam. And I usually try to give you at least close to a week, sometimes not a full week, but most of a week after we finish the material before I give the exam. So, So I'd say the nearest we'd have an exam, it'd be nice to have it on a day that we have lab, the way we run the test, so it wouldn't be 2 weeks from today, it'd be Thursday of that week, maybe, if things go as planned. But we'll talk about that as we get closer. So we're going through the arachnida, all the class arachnida, and all the not all the orders, but some of the orders within the arachnida.
Like 6 of the 11?
Like? Something like that's what I said. 4, yep, 6. And so we just finished we've done the spiders, and now we've done the Apiliones, the daddy long legs.
And the scorpiones.
Now we're ready to start the mites and ticks, the acarina. Mites and ticks, what can we say? There's lots of them. Especially mites. Mites are everywhere. So let's get my screen down here. Throw this on. Again, these are the mites and ticks. They have two body regions, the prosoma and the epistosoma. They're broadly joined, so they're not like what you see in the spiders. They don't have a pedicel. When they're first hatch from the eggs, they only have three pairs of legs and are called larvae. Yep. Then, as they go through their next molt, they gain a pair of legs to have the four, and then they're still called nymphs. And then, as adults, they have the four pairs of legs. They often lack eyes, but you may not know it that sometimes ticks do have eyes, and they're in a weird place. Yeah, I'm going to come back to that here in a second. But this handout has all the pictures of lots of
mosquito.
Yeah. These are not the whole, they've just done the hardened parts. This one clear over to the left is a full blown
tick.
You got that one? Yep. And so all these others are just this hardened part that actually the body would come on down around like this, But if they have eyes, you can see it labeled there. They're at the corner of those, that scutum on the sides there. Not all of them have eyes, but if they do, that's where they would be.
Yeah, that is a weird place to have them. Or at least it looks very weird because it's almost like in the middle of their mass. In general,
yeah, they're...
So it's like...
Yep. They have, like all the other arachnids, they have a pair of chelicerae, a pair of pedipalps, and then four pairs of legs. The mouth parts, and actually, I mean, you can see them kind of on here, the bigger picture. The whole mouth parts is, we kind of include this whole area. And that's called the capitulum. So it's that anterior hardened part. There's usually a pair of pedipalps, or a pair of palps, just should say palps. So the palps are going out there. You can see them on all of these. And then there's a central region called, the central region in here is called the hypostome. And if we go back to the previous handout, there's a blow up of that hypostome right there in the middle. And that's what it looks like. And that's why it's, I mean, they've got all these backward projecting teeth that are like the barbs on a hook. So when they stick that into you, then they flare out. And it's hard to pull. That's why you can't hardly pull a tick loose from you without their mouth parts breaking off inside you.
So this part's the hypostome.
That's the hypostome, that central part of the capitulum. And just to give you an idea of some of the stuff we go through identifying ticks, and it's not hard for me because I take them all to Jerry. Mm-hmm. Jerry does. Jerry's our tick guy. But you got to count how many teeth there are. The number of teeth, they're in rows. And you got to count like here, here, and here. And it may be like this tick species has 3-3-4 tick teeth going across. So or it might be 4-4-4. Or, yeah, the number of teeth. So we're getting down to having to look at that little tiny hypostome. And one of the big problems, of course, is people are bringing them in because they've been biting them. Again, their mouth parts break off in there, and so we don't even have that part anymore. So, in fact, Jerry, I think when some of them we can identify in other ways, but some of the tough ones, that's the first thing he does is mounts it on a microscope slide. So that it'll be a little easier for him to look at. So.
So is the soft body or the hard body ticks more harder to identify?
I don't know that we've even done very many soft-bodied ones. I don't know. I'm thinking about more of the hard-body ticks, the things that normally are on the deer ticks, the dog ticks, and those things.
It's very similar to how, like outside of, you know, the part, like it being, we need this specific part to identify it is very similar to how we need to identify beetles, in a sense.
And I suppose the best word. About anything. That's why I say, you know, you don't know when you're mounting up like your general collection stuff until we get to those groups in the class. But like in my group, a lot of them, they've got a scent gland underneath that's real important for identification. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when you pin up stink bugs or cydnids or anything that I work on, you don't worry about that. You just pin them up and, well, lo and behold, when they dry, invariably the legs will be covering that up. And so I've gotten, at least for some groups that I know I'll need to see that, when I pin them up, I spread those legs apart so you can see it and then let it dry that way. So, Let's see, some other things that we talk about on ticks. I'll go back to the first handout that I had up there. I'll point out just a few more structures that we often use in identification. Some of them have a little roughened area on the underneath side of the body where there's some spiracles called the spiracular plate. See it labeled right there, and it's those areas over here. And the shape of that spiracular plate varies from group to group. So that's sometimes used to help with identification. Some ticks have the posterior end of the body with these little sutures making these little square areas. Those are called festoons. I'm trying to say, I thought that was there. It's labeled up there, festoon. And so whether they have those or not, some don't, some do. That is one thing that we look for. And then there's another thing called the anal groove. And the shape of that varies. You can see the bottom left two, they don't have it labeled, but they got an arrow going to it. This is the anal groove, and this one is just kind of like that. Whereas over here, the anal groove is a big horseshoe-shaped thing going around it. So that groove in and around the anus is diagnostic. Helps us identify some species. There's lots of these things out. Lots of mites. Mites are everywhere. Some of them feed on plants. If you've ever had house plants, you probably have had mite problems. My wife loves miniature rose plants, and every year I get mite problems. And I've tried sprays, I've tried systemics. The only thing that ever has worked for me is about once or twice a week, I just take the whole potted plant over to the sink and spray it down with a hard spray of water to knock them off. And that usually works though, but if you got a big house plant, you can't do that. There's predatory mites. There's mites that get on bees. There's mites that cause diseases on domestic animals, mange and scabies and those sort of things. Pardon?
I'm trying to think of the group of the mites.
I wouldn't know. You've got Jerry again has given you tons of, of handouts. I think when he was here as a student, see he was a student here. Actually when I came, was hired on, he was just finishing up his PhD here. But I think
He does have a PhD.
Oh yeah.
Know this.
Oh yeah, he's got a doctoral degree. But before I got here, we had a professor here named Dr. Oseto, who actually ended up being the chair of the department at Purdue. But he was a mite person and taught a mite class. So Jerry took his mite. That may be the reason why we have so many handouts on mites. But they're everywhere, about everything. Situation you can get. Of course, you're aware of ticks and the tick-borne diseases, Rocky Mountain spotted fever and things like that. And then, of course, the Lyme disease is the one that's been talked about most lately, it seems like. They're the smaller species. You know, if we can usually tell pretty quick if a big tick comes in, oh, well, that's not the one that spreads Lyme disease. Where we have trouble is when the small ones come in, whether it's one of the Ixodes or whether it's an immature stage of one of the bigger ones. And again, sometimes you can tell by the number of legs and stuff. But anyway, it's the genus is Ixodes that does the Lyme disease. It used to be called Damini or something. I thought it was an appropriate name, but ended up that name was a synonym or a homonym, I forget. So the one in our area now is Ixodes scapularis. So anyway, that I believe covers what I wanted to talk about with ticks. In our area, I don't know how long you've been here. When did you come?
August.
In August. By August, usually ticks aren't too prevalent around here. It's more earlier in the summer. But there's been times where I've gone down to the sand hills early in the summer, and you're picking them off. While you're collecting, you can fill them. But also, it's about an hour drive, and while I'm driving, I'll say, oh, there's another one, and you get it and just throw it out the window as I'm driving. But then you got it when you get home, you got to take all your clothes off and do a tick check, and mm-hmm. you'll find them. And I do react to the bites. Mosquitoes, I don't hardly react to anymore. A little itching here and there, but the tick bites, I'll get a big red spot, and it'll itch for a number of days and stuff. So,
but. Yeah, I'm in the same boat there.
Yeah. Okay, the next order we'll take a look at is the pseudoscorpiones. Another tough one to remember. It includes the pseudoscorpions.
You don't say.
Chiggers, as I say, some of the mites that cause chiggers. I've never had problems with chiggers up here. Yeah, more southern. We had lots of problems with them where I grew up in Indiana. We'd go out picking raspberries or blackberries, and I remember, wow, we'd get nailed with chiggers. So, and they would crawl up your legs, and kind of the middle part of the body is where they. I think here, if we have any chiggers, they tend to are more around the sock area, around the lower legs and feet, but. I haven't noticed chigger problems up here. Pseudoscorpiones, called pseudoscorpions, because they do look a lot like scorpions in general respect, but as you can see, they don't really have or don't have the tail and the sting at the end. And these are often quite a bit smaller. These are usually under a half an inch in length. They're very small things. Have you seen them around here?
I don't think I've seen them around here, but I've seen specimens of them.
Yeah, they do occur around here, so we periodically will get some pseudoscorpions in. So they usually are under where I see them most is under the bark of trees. They can be under rocks or stones or so. There's only about 200 species in North America. They look like scorpions, but lack the tail and the sting, usually much smaller. The prosoma is covered with an undivided carapace. They have no more than two pairs of eyes, probably just simple eyes. They again have the enlarged pedipalps. Look like pinchers, like the scorpions do. They'd be what we call chelate. These are relatively flat, because they are often found under the bark of trees, under the dead bark. They have the pair of chelicerae, the pair of pedipalps, and four walking legs. No pedicel, no telson. Some have venom glands, and some can spin silk, but the silk glands would be on their chelicerae up by the mouth parts. They're primarily under the bark or under stones or rocks. Usually they feed on other small insects or organisms.
So they have spinnerets next to the chelicerae in some cases?
I don't know. Not seen them called spinnerets, but they have silk glands maybe up by the chelicerae. Kind of cool when you find them there. Neat looking creatures. We also this class, I mean, there's a lot more, again, orders, and I think Jerry's provided you with handouts of some of the other minor orders, and some of them are really cool, the vinaigrettes, and, or vinaigroons, and whip scorpions. This is a smaller group, too, but we do talk about these a little bit, the solifugi. These do occur out in the southwestern part of the state. We've caught solifugins out there. Where we kind of, Jerry and I anyway, kind of learned of them. There actually was a spider expert professor at Dickinson for a while. And we worked with him on some stuff. He identified a lot of our spiders in our collection, and he did some survey work out there. But he found a place where he could get, he's up on the top of this hill or butte right on the edge, close to Medora. We called it Freeman's Frontier at the time. I don't know if you can get there, if they've bulldozed it down now or what, but he caught tons of these. I think he may have wiped them out on that butte. But so anyway, the solifugids, they're called the wind scorpions. There's about 120 species in North America, so they're more diverse than the pseudoscorpions are. Their body is hairy, somewhat constricted in the middle. One of the characters to recognize them is the chelicerae are much larger. That's what this whole thing here, those are the chelicerae on this thing. So much larger than what you see in some of the other groups we've talked about. There are usually 4 to 6 eyes, no tail sign. These things may bite, but they don't have venom glands.
That's good.
Yeah. Again, they have 1 pair of chelicerae, the pair of pedipalps, and the 4 pairs of legs, kind of the standard. The interesting thing about them, almost kind of like the scorpions that had the pectines, these have some structures on the underneath side, but they're actually attached to the hind pair of legs. You can see this is the underneath side, this is the hind pair of legs, and there's these little paddle-like structures. Mm-hmm. 5 of them on each side. Called the mallet-shaped organs, or sometimes they're called malleoli. And again, they're not sure what the function is. I think your textbook may say they probably have a sensory function of some kind.
Are those individual of the racket organs?
Pardon?
Are those...
those ratchet or racket,
the racket organs?
Yeah.
The same thing, or just individual, different?
I would say each one is a mallet-shaped organ. Malleoli is plural. So each one would be like a malleolus. So yeah, ratchet organs. Each one would be a ratchet organ. Located on the coccyx, the trochanters. Again, these are relatively common in drier, arid areas. Like I said, the southwestern part of North Dakota, we get a fair number of things that are more typical of the desert areas of like Arizona, New Mexico, they come up. And so that's those. Now the next, actually I'll just leave this up here for a second. Because I mean, that finishes the orders within the Arachnida. Now there's one class left that we want to talk about in this group, and that's the Pycnogonida. Anyway, the class of Pycnogonida. And these are called the sea spiders. And so you're looking for a handout. That's why I left this up there, so I could write something. We haven't ever made a handout for the Pycnogonida.
Okay.
Now, I don't know why. I'll say something to him again that should be on our wish list. Again, we don't have one for the trilobites either. Should make one for the trilobites. But the Pycnogonida, these are the sea spiders. Commonly called sea spiders. They look a little bit like spiders. They've got a fairly small cephalothorax, and the abdomen is very reduced. And so what they really look like is almost like just a little tiny body, and then there's all these legs, and these legs just look like they bend every which way. And so there'd be eight of these legs. And so they just look really weird.
They're probably the most alien thing I've seen.
Yeah, you called up a picture of it there.
Yeah, yeah. I also remember from last year, like, as an arachnophobe, this is definitely on my list of stay away.
Yeah, I don't know. They're marine animals, and generally speaking, they are deeper water creatures. Although my notes say sometimes you can find them in shallower water under stones and things in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But they're marine animals. They look like spiders with their legs bent many times. They have a partial cephalothorax and a rudimentary abdomen. They are predatory and kind of have sucking type mouth parts, which is kind of different.
They look like face huggers.
Oh, yeah.
Like what?
Face huggers.
Face huggers?
From Alien, the movie. Yeah, those things are.
They generally are deep water, but maybe shallower, relatively rare. I think we used to have some examples for you to see, so hopefully there's some there. We'll check on that. But so that's that. And so now we're ready to move into the subphylum Crustacea. The subphylum Crustacea, for the whole subphylum, these are some characteristics for the whole subphylum. Now we have a group that has, generally speaking, has two pairs of antennae. So crustaceans have two pairs of antennae. Most of the appendages are what we call biramus. You know what biramus is?
Most of the appendages are biramus.
Means they split into two when it comes out of the body and as one appendage,
okay,
and
yep.
Then it splits into two. A lot of them, it looks like pinchers almost. Oh, jeez, I got all these smaller, minor arachnida orders and stuff that Jerry's got here and got to get through. Anyway, most of the appendages, get up and look at them close. They go out and then they split into two. Sometimes it pincher like. We'll see some examples when we get those overheads up. So, but most of the appendages are biramus. That is, they are bifurcating or divided into two parts. They still have two body regions, the cephalothorax and the abdomen. They have well-developed mandibles. So now we don't have the chelicerae that we saw in the Chelicerata. They usually have 5 to 7 pairs of walking legs, although there may be additional leg-like appendages on the abdomen that are sometimes called swimmerets. Most of these groups, or most of the individuals in the Crustacea, are aquatic. Your text discusses a lot of classes. There's many classes of crustaceans. Most of them are fairly small classes, meaning not very many, not very diverse, not many species. And some of them are small in size too, and they're not common. They may be things you've heard of before, brachiopods and copepods and things like that. We're not going to cover all those. We're only going to look at one class, the class Malacostraca, which is divided into two orders. So here we have the Malacostraca. Well, we're only going to look at two of the orders in the Malacostraca. Again, there's another one illustrated there, amphipods. Sometimes you probably have seen or amphipods in that. But we're going to talk about the one on the right on this handout, the Isopoda, and then the next one is the Decapoda. So, the Isopoda, what does the order name mean?
1 foot, yeah. Mm. No, it's ISO. Not. Iso isn't a one. It's
same. From above?
He's right. I mean, I don't know about the above part, but same. Same is, it's, iso means same, like mm-hmm. Isoptera are the termites. Their front and hind wings both look about the same size and shape. They're the same winged insects.
Okay.
And of course, poda is foot, so these are the same legs. All their pairs of legs look about the same. None are more enlarged than the others in that. So the isopods are what we call pill bugs or roly-polies. So, and they have 7 pairs of legs. They do not have a carapace. They have 2 pairs of antennae, but one pair is small and really hair-like. I noticed that this picture up in the upper right-hand corner, you can kind of see the 2 antennae. Mm-hmm. But on all the others, it looks like they only have 1 pair drawn, but it's because the other pair is just real small and hair-like. And like I said, they should have 7 pairs of legs. Many isopods are marine living, under stones or in seaweed, but there are terrestrial forms, of course. Our species up here tend not to roll up in a ball. You know, I've had students up here when I talk about roly-polies, and it's like, what's a roly-poly? But everywhere else I've been, yeah, they roll up into a tight ball when you disturb them in that. They're usually in the soil litter, detritus, sometimes under bark. Sometimes they can cause some damage to plants and stuff, but usually not. They're usually, or if they're a problem, it's more of a nuisance thing. Get this time of year, they start coming inside. They want to be warm too, so they'll start coming inside from the outside. And occasionally you see them in the houses, but often people complain about their garages being full of pill bugs. So anyway, that's the Isopoda. And then the other order within the Malacostraca we'll talk about is the Decapoda. And of course, we probably know what Decapoda means, right?
10.
These are the 10-footed. Means they've got only 5 pairs of legs. So the isopods have 7 pairs, the decapoda have 5 pairs of true walking legs.
Mm-hmm.
The name refers to having 5 pairs of legs, 10 total. These are our most commonly encountered crustaceans, including crayfish, shrimp, crabs, lobsters, etc. When I talk to students about eating insects, you know, insects is food, and people all over the world eat insects. In fact, it's a main staple in some areas, but of course here we frown on it. one of the things I always say is, well, one of the closest relatives of the insects are the crustaceans, and we love to eat shrimp and lobster. And I think more than instead of talking them into eating insects, it might make them less likely to eat the shrimp and stuff. But anyway, again, they have two pairs of antennae, but as you'll see in some of these, when you get looking at it, you'll swear it has three pairs of antennae, some of these crayfish and stuff. But you got to go all the way to the bottom. Clear over here on the left-hand side of your handout, you'll see there's one end long antenna, and then coming out is a second one, and like we said, it's biramus. It splits into two. So sometimes at your first look, you'll say, oh, this thing's got three antennae, but it's actually the one just splits into two. They're in the decapoda, they've got a carapace covering the cephalothorax part. They have five pairs of legs. And as I said, they have two pairs of antennae, but they bifurcate, so it looks like they may have more. They have, you see the pincher-like things, but they're not the same as what we see in like the scorpions and that. Those were pedipalps. These are actually some of the true, one of the pair of walking legs.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. They're a different origin or different derivation than what we see in the scorpions.
The abbreviation is CHPD. What's that?
That's that's probably for chelipad. So it's still chelate, pincher-like, and ped. So that CHPD is probably for, like, it's a, some people would call that a chelipad. Chelipad. So it's not really well illustrated, but we're... Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep, those are the five pairs of legs. And on the, well, here you can see it on this side view. There's the five pair of legs, but down here in the abdomen underneath side, there'll be still some small, but they're not really functioning like the others, like legs. That's what we call the swimmerettes. And some of these things on the underneath side will have still some leg-like appendages on the posterior part of the body. Okay, moving along now, and again, he's given you a bunch more handouts on some of the others. There's the brachiopods, or brachiopods, and ostracoda, and copepods, but now we'll be moving on, that finishes up the crustaceans. Now we're going to talk about the subphylum Atelocereida. Yeah, the Atelocereida includes the millipedes, centipedes, a few other things that we're going to talk about, and it also includes the hexapods, the insects. Some people, now the insects seem to be different than the millipedes, centipedes, so some people chop that off, and then the remaining groups, just the millipedes, centipedes, and a few of these other smaller classes that we'll talk about, they'll call that the myriapoda. Okay, so a myriapoda is like the Atelocereida minus the hexapods. So the group excluding hexapods is often called the myriapoda. The myriapod classes have two body regions. The myriapod body style, where they have a head and trunk region. So the previous groups had two body regions, but the leg-like appendages were on the front region. In the myriapods, they have two regions, the head and the trunk region, or sometimes it's called the abdomen, but the legs are now on the posterior body region. These organisms, in general, usually have a single pair of antennae. Their appendages are now uniramous. They don't split into two. within this subphylum, the Telecerata, we're going to discuss five different classes: the Diplopoda, Chelopoda, the Parapoda, the Symphyla, and then the Hexapods will occupy the whole rest of the semester. So, and the first one we'll talk about is the Diplopoda. What does Diplopoda mean?
One of the two.
What's that?
10 or 100.
They might as well just call it the dipoda or something. Diplo means two. It's still just two. And it's referring to the fact that they have two pairs of legs per segment. So these are the millipedes. Mm-hmm. And so they usually have, in just in general, twice as many legs as centipedes do. Mm-hmm. These often have 30 or more pairs of legs, whereas centipedes, I think we usually say they have 15 or more pairs of legs. Mm-hmm. So these are the millipedes. The name refers or means two-footed for the fact they have two pairs of legs per segment. They do have two body regions, the head and the abdomen or trunk. They usually have 30 or more pairs of legs. Now, these, and I usually draw this too, but I noticed they've got it drawn for me. They've got the cross-section of these. If you cut them in two and look head-on, notice that in most of these, the cross-section is pretty much circular. When we get to the centipedes, if you do the same thing, to me, they look much flatter. They won't be nice and circular. So one way you can kind of quickly tell a millipede from a centipede. I mean, you ought to be able to tell real quick by seeing that it has two pairs of legs per mm-hmm. per body segment. Also, millipedes lack what we call poison fangs. And we'll talk about poison fangs when we get to the centipedes. But centipedes have a pair of their first pair of legs behind the mouth parts are modified into poison fangs. Mm-hmm. Millipedes don't have that, so. Newly hatched millipedes only have three pairs of legs, but the additional legs are then added during each molt. The reproductive organs in millipedes are anterior. They're up close to the head. I see that in some of these other groups too. They don't really have it. I don't think they really have it illustrated in that, but anyway, the reproductive organs are anterior, the anterior part of the trunk area. And again, they lack the poison fangs found in the centipedes. They usually have a pair of compound eyes. These are, again, usually found in leaf litter, detritus, that sort of area, moist areas, where they feed on other organisms and dead and dying organisms. They, in general, they do not bite. Usually you can handle millipedes without any problems. Most millipedes are scavengers, feed on decaying material, but some feed on living plants. Can be a pest. And generally they don't bite humans. Whereas, the next large group is the centipedes, the Chelopoda. What does kilo mean? This is a tougher one. Because, why it's tougher, because it has nothing to do with the legs. You see poda. Mm-hmm. You know, before, millipedes were the diplopoda, meaning two legs. Kilo means lip. So you'd say this is the lip foot. Actually, I guess it does, because it's the first pair of legs. The first pair of legs are the lip foot. It's referring to the fact that first pair of legs is modified into poison fangs.
Okay.
And you can see it pretty clearly right here, this lateral view near the middle of the page, the poison fangs. Mm-hmm. Here you can see it too, on the underneath side, the one in the middle there, these poison fangs.
And
like the name means, they can bite with those. Has some venom. It can be a very painful bite. So that's the thing why people are a little... don't recommend that you handle millipedes if you can't be sure you can recognize a millipede from a centipede. I feel confident I usually can, so I grab a millipede, but I won't touch centipedes much. Again, these are the centipedes. The name Lipfoot, it means Lipfoot, refers to the fact that they have this first pair of legs modified into poison fangs. Sometimes they're called toxiconathes. Toxiconathe means mouth part. Or maxillipeds. They only have one pair of legs per body segment. So millipedes had two per segment. These only have one per segment. So we say they usually have 15 or more pairs of legs. In this group, the reproductive organs, the genital organs, are located at the posterior end of the body, where you guess you'd normally expect it. Again, the two body regions, head and the abdomen or trunk, much more flattened. They don't really show a cross section here, but it'd be much more flattened, like I drew a second ago. Usually found in protected areas, such as in the soil. Oh, last time somebody, I didn't have in my notes anything about the eyes, and somebody last time asked about eyes, so I looked it up today. These oftentimes lack eyes, but sometimes they have simple eyes that sometimes they form a little cluster, so it ends up looking or functioning like a true compound eye. Mm-hmm. So some lack eyes, some have just a few simple eyes, some have simple eyes that form a cluster that looks like a compound eye. These are predaceous, feeding on small insects and other arthropods. Some can inflict a painful bite. Some species can spin silk. I don't know where the silk glands are on these. Maybe that'll be another thing I should look up. It says that sometimes males spin a web and deposits its sperm on it, and then the female comes later and picks the sperm up off the web. So. And so that's the centipedes. We got two more smaller ones to go through, and we'll call it a day today. The last two are a couple classes that are they're very small, not as commonly encountered. In fact, the only way you're probably going to get examples of either one, and they both do occur here in the Fargo area, so it is possible. Mm-hmm. But the only, jeez, I'm having trouble here. The only way you'll probably catch these is by taking soil samples and running Berlazes, and even then you'll probably have to be under the microscope looking through your catch, because these will be very small. The first one are the pyropods. These are minute, whitish organs that can generally be recognized by the many branched antennae. So you can see the antennae come out. I don't know if I'd say many, but anyway, the antennae come out and they're branched.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you tell the easiest way to recognize a pyropod. They're minute, whitish organisms recognized by the antennae. They have nine pairs of legs, situated one per segment. They're like the millipedes, that the reproductive organs are at the anterior end of the trunk again. Again, they're found in soil and leaf litter, and they do occur around here. And then the last group are the symphylons, often commonly called garden centipedes. But they are also very small, slender organisms, mm-hmm. pale in color. They have, instead of having branched antennae, they have fairly long, many segmented antennae. Mm-hmm. You can see those on there. Most of them anyway have long, many segmented antennae. They'll have 10 to 12 pairs of legs, and the reproductive organs are also located at the anterior part of the body. Again, they occur in soil or leaf litter. There is a species that's known to feed on the roots of plants and occasionally can be a pest of vegetables. That's where this garden centipede common name comes from. Again, they've been collected in the Fargo area, so it's possible for you to get these. And then, of course, the last class within this Atelocerata is the Hexapoda, which these are the six-legged arthropods that we'll spend the rest of the semester discussing in review. You know, they've got three body regions, the head, thorax, and abdomen, one pair of antennae, and usually two pairs of wings, but we'll see that. There are a number of groups that don't have any wings, or even a few with one pair of wings. So, and I don't have handouts made, but in the past I've gone through that thing we talked about last time about the worm mm-hmm. and how it developed. I think I do that in morphology a little bit too, so it's kind of, so I don't think I'm going to cover it here. Just, we've kind of talked about it briefly, that in fact we're not even sure if that's how the evolution went anymore, but there is evidence in insects, in some insect groups, that at one time there were appendages on all the body segments, and as I said, those that were near the head or the mouth opening became modified into the present day mouth parts, so they're derived from leg-like appendages. The next three pairs on the thorax evolved into the walking legs. But there are some groups that still have styli on the abdominal segment that they think are the old vestiges of leg-like appendages that used to be on the abdomen. So things like silverfish and firebrats and things like that still have little styli on each abdominal segment. So anyway, that gets us to there, and as of right now, we'll plan on going out collecting Tuesday. The weather looks good. Mm-hmm.
Is wind going to be a major factor at all? I noticed that it was a bit high on the wind side.
They're predicting high winds on?
Well, it's 15 miles. I don't
know how. Oh, that's doable. That was okay. Probably, that's maybe about like it was when we went up to Castle Woods up north. When you get up in the 30s is when it maybe starts. But even so, there's a lot of trees and sheltered areas in some places in that.
I didn't really think about like how fast wind would be until, you know, last week where I was looking out, or this week where I was looking out. I was like, oh, is that going to be a factor?
I tell the story. When I interviewed for this job, mm-hmm. I came in September, I think, and it was really windy all the days I was here. And of course it is, you know, pretty windy place up here. We get a lot of wind, but I noticed the wind. It was always windy. And so I finally asked somebody, I said, does the wind always blow like this? And the guy said, oh no, sometimes it comes from the other direction. All right, well, Tuesday we'll plan on going out collecting. I'll probably email on Monday to verify that, and starting time, we may, again, if we can get away a little bit earlier, we can go maybe a little bit farther away or something. So, and then, again, if the weather's decent, we may go someplace on Thursday even. So, but we'll play it by ear, see how the weather treats us. All right.